The Defense Logistics Agency has been using performance-based contracts for years now. Now they're trying to expand the way those contracts are used. The change could help the DLA take advantage of a potential $1 billion in cost savings. Federal News Radio's reporter Scott Moscione has more.
The Defense Department buys a lot of things. In fact, that's an understatement. DoD's budget is more than $600 billion. And that goes into a lot of things, like procurement of new weapon systems and maintaining current ones. That money also replaces parts, buys ammunition, and provides medical supplies. That's where the Defense Logistics Agency comes in. The DLA spends tens of billions of dollars on material and parts that supply the troops and sustain weapon systems. Of course, when DLA is buying these goods, it wants to save money for itself, DoD, and the services. Part of DLA's policy to save money is to enhance the role of performance-based logistics in its contracts. Performance-based logistics, or PBL, is something that's been used for years, but it's a kind of tricky concept to grasp. DLA's program manager for the Enterprise PBL effort, Carlo Montemayor, can explain it best.
A PBL contract in its basic form is one that contracts in terms of buying a performance outcome as opposed to a service or a supply contract. So instead of the traditional contract that we're familiar here with DLA in terms of buying parts, we're actually buying a performance outcome that the vendor can meet. And through those outcomes, we are measuring their performance through metrics that are agreed upon in the contract. So there are also incentives and disincentives depending on how well they perform to those metrics, either whether they exceed or don't meet those metrics. And those are the basic tenets of a PBL contract.
Basically, in the traditional sense of PBL, you're paying for results and not exactly for the object. Most of DLA's current PBL contracts are materials. So here's an example of how DLA uses PBLs that we can all relate to. Let's say you go to wash the dishes and there's no soap left, or you try and clean up a spill and the paper towels have just run out, or, God forbid, you reach for the toilet paper and there's just the cardboard of the roll left. The military doesn't want that to happen to its troops, so it keeps them well stocked through the DLA. The DLA is kind of like the linen closet, where you keep all your extra supplies. If you want your soap and your paper towels and your toilet paper to always be handy for a refill without the long trip to the store, you need lots of closets. Well, square footage costs money, and that's how DLA looks at it too. Every depot they have costs money. PBLs rely on the vendors, or the stores, to use metrics on how to keep your linen closet stocked based on your usage, without having to buy a million closets and stuffing them with items. That's how the DLA does most of its PBL contracts now. But PBL can be implemented in many other ways to save money for industry and government. Here's Lockheed Martin's Vice President for Logistics and Sustainment, Lou Kratz, at the Center for International and Strategic Studies on why PBLs are important and should be diversified.
I can't name one weapons platform that's supported entirely by government. Every single system we have has some role for industry. And so all we're talking about with PBL, I believe, is the business arrangement for that portion of the support. So you can pay industry for failure, and we'll sell you all the parts you want. We'll sell you all the engineering support you want. Buy the drink. That's how we do most of the 70% today. Or we can change the business environment and buy for success. Buy the outcome that the warfighter wants.
The 70% Kratz is talking about has to do with the fact that 70% of weapons costs are incurred during sustainment. Right now, DLA mostly uses PBL for materials, but it wants to expand into life cycles and weapon sustainment. Here's Montemayor again.
Currently, our PBLs are material, right? Class 9 primarily, where the vendors are filling our shelves, and we have a partnership as a product support provider for our customers, for the services. So right now, that's where most of our PBL contracts are, but we're looking towards getting into the life cycle aspect of how a component or a subsystem performs. And we want to partner with the services and the services PMs on how we can play a part in improving readiness to support warfighter requirements.
Last month, the Center for Strategic and International Studies came out with a report and found that DLA may be missing out on about $1 billion in savings through PBL, partly in these life cycle sustainment and maintenance areas. Here's Rick Teal, a procurement analyst for DLA, on how sustainment PBLs would work.
If you take an example of a jet engine, that is put into operation, it's used for a period of time, and then it's pulled back in for overhaul. What we're looking to do is to broaden those abilities of the reliability and availability of those engines so the warfighter supported more doesn't have to depend so much as much as on the overhaul when they go back into the depots. So that's where the reduction in cost comes from, because the demand for the components that goes on the engine lowers. It starts going down. And then you also have to have an incentive for industry to be willing to make the investments in those improvements into the reliability and availability to help those components have the engine perform better for the warfighter so it's in use longer.
So let's say you buy a car and the manufacturer says it will need repair every 5,000 miles. With a PBL, you would reward the car manufacturer for making the product better. Instead of having to pay costs for repair every 5,000 miles, you give the manufacturer a new deal. If she can make the car run well for 15,000 miles, instead, you'll give her a monetary award. It works well for everyone. The government saves, the troops have better equipment, and industry has a better product. Getting there is easier said than done, however, because DLA needs the cooperation of both the military services and industry. Industry first has to make the decision that its product can get better, and there's room for innovation and profit. Here's Montemayor again.
If commercial industry is willing to make investments in reliability so that part doesn't break down as much, then that company needs to be able to have a return on investment over time, right? So that they build that reliability, do less work, more time on wing as an example, for the warfighter so that they can operate and meet their requirements, their operational requirements. So some commodities lend itself better for PBL than others.
Secondly, the services have to be open to using PBL contracts through DLA to sustain weapon systems. Montemayor says talks are ongoing with the services to improve PBLs.
The services have a PBL initiative that they're trying to implement additional PBLs that are candidates for PBL programs. And DLA has been part of that discussion in terms of what role are they expecting DLA to play in those service PBL initiatives. In terms of feedback, I know that there are talks going on how to improve performance outcomes of these different systems and subsystems. So talks are always ongoing on how we can improve readiness and warfighter outcomes to support the warfighter requirements. But in terms of formal discussions, those are always ongoing on how we can do business better.
For now, the future of PBLs lies in a constant triangulation between DLA, the services, and industry. From Washington, Scott Massioni, FederalNewsRadio.com, and 1500 AM.